Good morning, everybody. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF here on this hump day morning. I hope everybody is doing well out there. 58 degrees outside feels perfect to me out there. And joining me in studio is James Coover and Jesse Gilmore from the K-State Extension Office. And Gerard, good morning, guys. How are you doing today?
Good morning. Doing good.
Pretty good. Definitely enjoyed the 58 degree weather.
Oh, most definitely. Especially since you said you saw this morning just out roaming about. It was a red fox this morning, and he was just totally undisturbed by you. Just like, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
And walking up into somebody's yard. So, all right, guys. Well, we'll go ahead and get it started here in just a second. But, Jesse, you did say you had something, an event you wanted to talk about real quick.
Yeah. So, the K-State Garden Hour is winding down for the year. We've had a lot of good classes so far. I think we've got maybe three or four more, and today's class is going to be on food preservation, some of the different techniques that you can preserve your garden harvest with, and some food safety tips to keep in mind when using these preservation methods. That's going to be from noon to one, and registration is on the Horticulture and Natural Resources page of K-State's website.
All right, so be sure to head on over to the K-State's website for that. And we'll get it started this morning first with you, James. And you did have a few topics you wanted to bring to the table, including preparing alfalfa and also herbicide, correct?
Yeah, and so I thought first I could kind of talk a little bit about herbicide drift, because it's something that's happening a lot out there, and it's a very touchy subject. So you got to be careful with everything you say. So herbicide drift, I mean, It occurs a lot this time of year, just based upon more or less what we're spraying on soybeans, actually. It is kind of mostly what's happening towards the end of July. We use a lot of herbicides on soybeans to control the weeds, and well, then a couple of weeks later, we start to see a lot of the issues that happen because of it. And some of it is also misapplication. It's actually spraying the wrong thing on a field. That it does happen. There's all sorts of things that can't. And so when herbicide drift happens, there's some things you can do and just some things you can't do. And so really it is a difficult situation almost every single time. And it kind of depends on the situation, whether if it's just like your garden or the trees around your yard, or where we're talking about your actual agronomic crop, a money generator. If there's money involved, it kind of changes the situation a little bit. And so, of course, you know, it depends on what steps you want to take. And so as far as regulatory governmental bodies, the only one that can actually regulate this stuff is the Kansas Department of Agriculture. They're really the only regulatory body that deals with this stuff. Extension, we're happy to come out and take a look. I mean, as far as controlling things, that's not really, yeah, we can't. So,
right.
but of course we'd be happy to come out and take a look. And so with the KDA, of course, if you fill out those applications online, they are required to come out and take a look at what happened and to fill out those forms. You know, they have to come out. A lot of people would like to have some sort of foliage testing or something like that to kind of prove what herbicide it was or what it came from. I can tell you that is a difficult thing to do. Foliage testing for a herbicide is difficult because A, it's kind of an expensive test. There's only about two labs in the country that I know about, at least within this side, I mean in the plains, that does that kind of testing. And it's expensive, and you have to know exactly what it is that you're looking for to be able to test for it. If you do a general lab, it's kind of hard to find out because it goes in categories of herbicide. It's difficult to pin down. And so another suggestion I would do is to actually take pictures. Make sure you're taking pictures as things go along, whether you actually can do something or not. That's regardless, just taking pictures. But honestly, the best thing you can do is just talk to your neighbors. Honestly, that's where a lot of these issues come from. It's a division between neighbors, which is really the hardest part when it comes to herbicide drift and dealing with the whole volatilization in this whole situation. Is really just splitting apart of neighbors and making sure that people are communicating together. there's not much that can be done financially outside of the court system, honestly. And people don't want to get lawyers involved. I do not blame you. But, you know, it's really part of it.
Slow everything down.
Yeah, unless there's an agreement between the two parties, there's really no governmental body that can decide that beyond the court system. And so, you know, some things to look at. So not all things that look like herbicide drift are actually herbicide drift. So don't automatically assume that your neighbor did something that ruined something.
Right.
You know, a lot of things are environmental, and a lot of herbicides are sprayed on label, and there are still mishaps that happen, even if everything went according to plan. And so this time of year, all of us agents are getting a lot of calls when it comes to this kind of damage. And so I just want people to know, like, there's a lot of emotions going around. There always are. And so really it's a matter of just being calm, taking evidence, and knowing your resources that you can go to.
So again, I was just, looking up, a couple of stories here, and it was even talking about, we just talked about dicamba drift and the future of farming. So,
yeah.
And that it's been kind of divisive, and include with dicamba. I believe that was a herbicide as well. But that's changed as well, has it not?
Yeah. But it's dicamba for the most part. Right. I was going to specifically say it. But the vast majority of the time, it's actually dicamba drift. Mm-hmm. And usually it's dicamba being sprayed on soybeans.
Right.
The ones, but there's something going on with that within the court system that I talked about earlier in the year. And so,
yeah, it was like the Ninth Circuit yes. Court of Appeals.
Yeah, exactly.
In San Francisco. So.
Yeah. But there's other dicamba products that we can still use
right.
all the time. And so, I don't think that's really going to change anything. Maybe they'll get rid of dicamba entirely next year. I don't know. But
right.
It's here for now.
Again, so. That's something that you were just talking about. Nobody wants to go to court because it slows things down. And I think even that's being appealed as of right now as well. So
yeah,
it's very interesting. And also, you were wanting to talk about this morning, James, was preparing for alfalfa, correct?
Yes. And so... on to happier topics.
Yes, good stuff.
Basically getting ready for your alfalfa planting or your wheat planting. Now is the time, especially if you're talking about alfalfa and cover crops. Now's the time to get ready for that. Because there's a lot of things you have to do, especially for alfalfa. It's such a sensitive crop.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really is a huge producer, but it needs the right field to grow in. It does not do well with poor soil nutrients. And so making sure the pH is right in that field first is paramount. Alfalfa does not grow well in acidic soils, which is most of Southeast Kansas.
Right.
So we have to make sure that we're growing it right. You know what the pH is. Also, alfalfa takes a lot of phosphorus and potassium. Every year, it probably takes around 60 pounds of phosphorus, around 300 pounds of potassium per acre off of a field. And so that's a whole lot of application that you've got to get ready for. Make sure that your background nutrients in that soil is right. Often not, that can mean, multiple samples throughout a field to make sure you're preparing that. Besides that, alfalfa is a very small seed, so it needs a firm seed bed. So this time of year, besides getting all the nutrients ready, you also need to be preparing the soil. Because if you just plow it up fresh and it's fluffy, you put that seed in there, it's going to sink in and it's not going to be planted right. And so really now's the right time to get everything sprayed down, everything tested, everything began to be prepared for alfalfa planting, but not in just 3 weeks time. I mean, around mid-September is when we plant a lot of this stuff. And that's kind of the exact same thing with cover crops. Honestly, really, you're less worried about pH or the nutrients, because you don't really care if it grows well or not. It's just getting something out there.
Mm-hmm.
However, the vast majority of them are really small seeded. And so you want to get that properly done, because most cover crops are going to be grazed. So you want to get that set up right too,
right,
to begin with. And so now's the right time. When it comes to alfalfa though, this is one of the few times I suggest spending money on a good genetics. Usually, you know, a lot of that stuff doesn't always pay off. This time it actually does, because you're going to have that crop for 4 to 5 years. And so there's a lot of old genetics when it comes to alfalfa, and there's some more expensive new genetics too that might be worth looking at. That, of course, involves herbicide resistance, disease resistance, to stuff that we did not have before. There's actually even some low lignin alfalfa that can really, it doesn't actually have lower lignin. It just stays vegetative longer. It doesn't quite get as stemmy. And so it makes it easier to harvest. So I would highly suggest looking at that stuff. Some of that stuff is really, the genetics are expensive. I'm talking, you know, $10 a pound or something. Wow. Crazy. Yeah, it's expensive. I don't know, usually it's actually kind of worth it if you're talking about the kind of fields that we plant alfalfa in. It's usually not hundreds of acres. We're planting alfalfa on a much smaller scale. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that stuff can be worth it. So now is the right time to get ready, you know, for your alfalfa, for your wheat. That's usually put into our corn fields, so we got a little time for that. And also our cover crops. So get out there, get sampling. We're ready. So
all right. And like you said, though, it is a pretty sensitive crop when it comes to pH, though, because if you don't, if like you say, if you just put it out there and don't test the pH or anything, it's not going to grow very well or at all, correct?
Yeah, and you can't fix it after it's planted. Right. You got to fix it beforehand. The same thing with the phosphorus. You got to be ready for alfalfa.
I mean, that's just like, you know, it's like scribbling all over a piece of paper with a crayon. It's like once the damage is done, the damage is done. You can't fix it.
Yes.
So
can't go back.
Unless you have, that would have to be amazing to be able to go back and fix that. But again, like I said, we do have pretty acidic soil here, though, in southeast Kansas. So I think most of our farmers probably do a pretty good job with that. They test that out.
Know.
So
yeah.
All right. Well, again, James, I thank you very much for that. Jesse, we'll come to you for just a second. And if you would just kind of preview what you would like to talk about in the next segment, because we're just a little bit low on time here.
Sure. So in the next segment, I'm going to talk a little bit about the Master Gardener program. We're currently accepting applications for the fall 2020 training, and I'll go over a little bit about how to apply for that, what training you get from that, and basically how to use that training that you get for volunteer opportunities. And then I'm also going to talk a little bit about fall lawn management, because we're getting to the point where cool season grasses should be fertilized and you might start seeing some dormancies appear in your yard that might be mistaken for your grass death, and kind of the way to tell the difference.
Absolutely. Well, again, guys, thank you so much for coming in today. We're going to go ahead and take a break. When we come back, we will have news at the top of the hour, and then we'll get back with these guys around 8:10. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF here on this Hump Day Wednesday. Welcome back to the Mighty 690 KGGF. Kyle High with you this morning. The things we talk about off air, we talk about cereal, and as before, we just went on air, literally seconds before we went on air. No, they did not group Cheerios and Honey Nut Cheerios together. They were two separate, and Honey Nut Cheerios was actually number two. So Cheerios is one, Honey Nut Cheerios is number two. All right, well, welcome back to Greenside Up. This is not the cereal show, but welcome back to Greenside Up. We have James Coover and Jesse Gilmore in studio this morning. And welcome back, guys. How are you doing?
Pretty good.
All right. Well, Jesse, before we get started with your what you were wanting to talk about, can you talk about your event that our program that is going on once again?
Yeah. So K-State Garden Hour is winding down for the year. We are going to do more topics next year. We've got maybe three or four more for this growing season. The topic today from noon to one is on food preservation and how you can keep your garden harvest fresh through the winter, pickling and other preservation techniques like that, and some food safety tips to keep in mind when you do those techniques. So signups are on the Horticulture and Natural Resources page of K-State's website, and that is today from 12 to 1.
All right, and you said pickling, and that reminds me of James. How did the pickle party go this past weekend?
So not very well. Not enough people signed up, and so we didn't have it.
Okay.
However, we did end up pickling all weekend just because we had all that produce.
Might as well do it, huh?
Yeah. My wife and her friends came over. We just had a party and pickled.
You just had a party at your pickle party at your place.
That's kind of what it turned into.
So it was the James Pickle Party. All right. All right. Well, Jesse, what you did want to talk about, again, was the Master Gardener program. And also you wanted to talk about the fall, your working on your lawns for fall, correct?
Yeah. So Wildcat District is currently accepting applications for Master Gardener training for fall 2020. With the pandemic the way it is right now, well, Krista Harding, who is the Southwind Horticulture agent, and I have decided that we're going to do our training completely online for this year. So there's no minimum number of people needed in order to have training. Whoever's interested in getting that training will get it this year, regardless of the number of people who sign up. Master Gardeners is a volunteer service program for horticulture. It started in Washington in 1972 through Washington State University, and now every state has its own unique Master Gardener program in cooperation with their land-grant university. In K-State, all that's really required for being a Master Gardener is that you have a high school diploma or GED. You go through the training in the fall, which varies depending on how it's how we choose to deliver it, but because of the pandemic, it's going to be Thursdays from 1 to 4 from September 3rd to December 17th with the Thanksgiving Thursday off. So it's 14 total weeks, I believe. There are 13 topics you learn about relating to horticulture, and it's all different types of horticulture. There's fruit and vegetable production, basic botany, soils, pesticides, and IPM, landscape horticulture, and plant ID, stuff like that. So you go through the training, and then at the end of the training, for the next calendar year, you do 40 hours of community service. For the Wildcat District, I'm going to work very closely with Master Gardeners to kind of facilitate those volunteer opportunities. Being four different counties, we've got a lot of places to volunteer that single counties might not get. But volunteer opportunities are very, very broad. You could work in education, giving classes to other people. I would not be the only one giving classes, but I'd work together with people who go through the training and want to give classes on things they specialize in or want to specialize in. There's also garden installation. I'm from Johnson County, and the Johnson County Master Gardeners have, I believe, 12 demonstration gardens throughout the county that they've basically designed, installed, and maintained on their own. There's a lot of different opportunities for that at like city parks or the Parsons Arboretum, that kind of thing. Although being a small, like a smaller district in terms of number of Master Gardeners, that would take probably a little bit of work, but I am willing to work with people on that too. Administration and fundraising, other volunteer opportunities like that. So it's a very broad, diverse program that you can really specialize in what you want. So the applications for that, get in touch with me for applications. They are due by August 27th, so coming up here in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, next Thursday, it looks like, as of right now, will be the deadline, I do believe.
Yep, and the cost for the program is $60.
All right, so be sure to get, if you, that's something you're interested in, be sure to get into that Master Gardening program. It sounds like a very comprehensive study, and just kind of learn pretty much a little bit of everything, and then, of course, doing the community service, getting out into the community. Let's go ahead and get to the your other main topic today is fall lawn, working on your fall lawn.
Sure. So as far as lawns go, I've noticed two main grass species. There's Bermuda grass and there's tall fescue. Bermuda grass is going to be a warm season grass. It is currently in its growing season right now. Tall fescue is a cool season grass, so its main growing seasons are in the spring and the fall. And if you need to seed tall fescue, it's coming up to the point, usually the third or fourth week in September, when you would want to seed. Fescue is probably the better choice for a lawn grass, just because Bermuda grass is very stubborn when it comes to shady positions in your yard. If you have a lot of trees, you might notice that in those shady positions, there's bare earth. Bermuda grass does not sustain itself in shady positions at all.
Yeah, you see that around trees quite a bit, where there's just big bare areas around it because like the grass will not grow there.
Yep. And so tall fescue is the better option for shady positions. Usually you will see a mix of different turf grass species, like a Bermuda grass and tall fescue mix, which is decent in coverage for both sunny and shady positions. If you were to choose one or the other, tall fescue would likely be the better option. It will still survive in sunny positions, but as with one homeowner that I visited yesterday, you might start see it going dormant in really hot or really dry conditions. Dormancy is often mistaken for death of your yard, where it basically yellows. Understanding what species of turf grass you have in your yard is important to determine if it's just going dormant during its non-growing season or if it is some other type of problem. Especially in tall fescue yards right now, you might start seeing it go dormant. It should green up again in the fall once the temperatures start getting cooler, like they are today.
Right.
So seeding is getting ready to happen, or should be happening here in the next month or so. Fertilization is the other thing that should be happening here pretty soon. Tall fescue needs there are 2 to 3 fertilizer applications during the year. The most important one is in September. So if you're going to apply nitrogen at any time for the grass, it should be at the end of September. There are also fertilizer applications in November and an optional one in May, depending on how high quality you want your yard to be. But September is easily the most important fertilizer application out of all of them. It is important to have a soil sample done so that you know kind of what your baseline nutrient levels are. You can do that at any of the extension offices, in Kansas, at least. I'm fairly certain Oklahoma, Arkansas, and Missouri also have their own soil testing lab for their respective universities. But that is something to contact your local extension agent about.
So would you say that some yards have a mix of both, that way that they can kind of have decent looking grass pretty much year round, or is it most yards have just one or the other?
So I would say that's probably split right about down the middle for the yards that I go to. When you see single species yards, it's more often going to be Bermuda grass mm-hmm. than anything else. Just because Bermuda grass is an incredibly low maintenance turf to have in your yard. Really low water requirements compared to other turf grass species. But I would say that mixes are probably going to be better for the ultimate dormancy to prevent dormancy in your yard. It's just that it's not going to look quite as consistent as single species yards are.
Okay, I think we have somebody on the line. Let me check real quick. They may be wanting to ask you a question, so we'll see if this is. And caller, you are on Green Side Up. How are you doing?
So old canes are not going to be productive, so it was the right choice to cut those out. new canes, I believe, I'm not 100% sure on this, but I believe you want to leave them in for this year. That way, during the next growing season, you don't have to worry, or the plant won't have to worry about vegetative growth and can put more energy into reproductive growth, which would be the flowering and the fruiting. That I believe that is correct. So I would leave the new canes in that have come in this year, and any that have produced a lot of berries this year will probably die off during the winter. But you should see more fruiting next year from the canes that just grew this year.
And well, they're just getting so out of control. I mean, they're like getting 10, 15 foot long, and I had an old brochure from K-State that said trim them back to about 3 foot for the winter, but will that harm my production for next year?
Compared to not trimming them at all, yes. But at the same time, you have that head start from what you would see in terms of fruiting if you cut them back to the ground. They will put some of their energy into new cane production, but giving them that 3 feet worth of cane to start off with will have better production than if you cut them back to the ground. Plus,
I wasn't going to cut them clear off, but they're just these long, you know, trailing vines, and I wondered if I should trim those back.
Yeah, it's all about what you can manage in terms of space. I have definitely been to houses where the blackberries have gotten out of control, and it's definitely worth cutting back because sometimes they can revert to thorned blackberries with enough reproduction. So,
don't want that.
No, definitely not. And it becomes such a hassle to manage if you do get some thorned reversion back in your blackberry canes that the homeowner that I went out to visit for their blackberry production, they ended up having to brush hog everything down because at that point it was just easier to start over with their blackberry canes and rogue out any of the ones that had reverted. It is definitely worth cutting them back somewhat in order to keep the vine or the canes manageable.
Okay. Trim them a little bit.
Yep. Back
All
to
right.
about 3
Thank
feet.
You.
You're welcome.
All right, so I think that was your first call, Jesse, on Green Side Up. So, again, we do encourage people to call occasionally if they do have a question. Of course, it's our open line numbers, which is 251-6909, 1-800-252-5443, 1-800-252-KGGF. If you would, if you ever do have a question during open line, we do encourage you to call. But I think we got another call here, so let's go ahead and get to the lines. Caller, you're on Green Side Up. Good morning. How are you doing today?
Good morning. I'm doing just fine. How about so is it a good time to transplant like a crepe myrtle?
Yes. You can transplant shrubs either in the fall or in the spring. With the temperatures the way they are, I'm probably guessing we're moving away from our really high summer heat, or I'm hoping that's the case anyway. It might be better to wait a couple of weeks until August has passed so that the temperatures are on the decline. With new transplants, they go through a lot of shock when they're first put in the ground. And with high heat, you do run the risk of shocking them to the point where it might not survive. So you definitely want to wait for cooler temperatures. I would say probably middle September, late September is probably the best time to transplant a crepe myrtle. Or you could wait until the spring to do that.
Okay.
But fall is actually slightly better for transplanting shrubs compared to the spring because they will start building up the energy reserves they need for the winter during the fall, and then you will get a head start on flower production in the next spring.
Yeah, because I hear that the announcement you all have about planting trees in the fall is the best time to plant, so that's why I was asking.
Yep, that is correct.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. So thank you very much, caller. And I think that is probably going to be it for today. We're reaching about 8:30. So we're going to go ahead and wrap up today. And Jesse and James, I thank you very much for coming on again today. And one more time, Jesse, before we do get out of here, you did have the program going on, in fact, today.
Yes. From 12 to 1 via Zoom. It is the K-State Garden Hour. Specifically for preserving the garden harvest into the winter via pickling, canning, and other food preservation techniques, as well as some food safety tips to keep in mind when you are using these techniques in order to ensure that no foodborne illness might work its way into your household.
All right, guys. Well, again, thank you so much for coming on today. We really do appreciate it. And we will see you guys again in a couple of weeks.
Okay.
All right. Good. We're going to go ahead and take a break, but when we come back, we'll have open line. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF.
If you are a certified mechanic in need of a fulfilling job, then head over to Roman